Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 67 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have an interview with the author of Remembering Ruby, a book that deals with a difficult subject, the death of your dog.
Actually, one of the things that makes the book a little bit different from some of the other really good stories about pet loss is that this book uses actually family photographs.
We have an interview about a website where you can pay tribute to your pet who has passed over.
Each pet owner can have a pet gallery where they can have photographs and movies of the pet. We have a poems, stories and prayers section. We have an e-card facility. We have message boards for our members.
And we catch up with Jill and the Poodle Martyrs, who were whisked away into police custody and under threat of death, and whose owners found themselves involved in a court case and under threat of possible bankruptcy. But first, the Dogcast Radio News.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. We start this episode with news of two rescue dogs, but it may not be exactly what you're expecting.
The first dog in question is a St Bernard Mastiff Cross from the UK, who had to be rescued by the Coast Guard. Arnold, who weighs around 15 stone, which is over 200 pounds, had climbed down over 100 steps to a beach in Cornwall. But with the tide fast coming in, the dog was too old and tired to climb back up the steps. Six lifeboatmen carried the huge dog to the welcome safety of a waiting boat.
The second dog is Molly, a search and rescue Labrador in Missouri, America. However, after years of work, it was Molly's turn to be rescued. She suddenly became tired and out of breath. She was diagnosed with a heart problem and may even have suffered a heart attack. Surgeons at the University of Missouri College of Veterinary Medicine inserted a pacemaker into the five-year-old dog. The surgery cost over $2,500, and donations flooded in from members of the public and from companies. Molly will need 2 weeks of complete rest, followed by 2 months of restricted activity, and then she should be able to return to work.
Meanwhile, in Canada, a group of workers are asking for help with regard to dogs. Canada Post is highlighting the fact that in the last 12 months, incidents in the National Capital Region involving dogs and Canada Post letter carriers have doubled, with many workers suffering bites or being chased. This is particularly a problem in the summer when doors are left open and replacement carriers make more deliveries. In conjunction with the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies, an initiative has been launched to make owners aware of the need to keep their dog away from the mail deliverer. The hope is that dog owners will pay more attention to keeping their dogs under control at the appropriate time and keep the lines of communication open.
Lines of a different kind were occupying a dog in China recently. The Tibetan Mastiff in question was performing an astounding high wire act in front of thousands of spectators. The Mastiff, called Huhu, balanced along two 30-feet-long wires around 12 feet high. The skill took a year of practicing to perfect.
And finally, in the UK, a couple have been trying to prove that their dog, Bella, has been around for 29 years. If the claim is verified, Bella can be recognised as the oldest dog in the world. Bella was acquired around 26 years ago from a shelter, and her owners believe that she was about 3 years old then. However, without the correct documentation, Bella's age cannot be established, and the existing record will go unchallenged. The record for the longest-lived dog is Bluey, an Australian sheepdog who made it to 29 years of age, and the second oldest was Butch, who lived his 28 years in America.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Melissa Wells is the author of Remembering Ruby, which is a book that can help families coping with the death of their dog. It's a lovely book, and here's Melissa to tell you more about it.
The way I describe it, it's actually a children's book, but I describe it as a family book because I wrote it more as a story for families to share together, not a story for you to shuttle your child off into a rocking chair in the corner and then go do the dishes. It would be something that you would actually sit and enjoy together. It is about the loss of a pet, but the way it begins is it kind of gives a little bit of history about the boy, and the story, by the way, is told from my son's point of view. It's a story about the boy and his beagle and the relationship they developed. The beagle was in the house first before the boy was born, and just kind of goes along with how they play together and the relationship that they have. And then the dog becomes ill, and because it's a children's book, I don't go into any details, of course. It's very age appropriate. It's for, I usually say between 4 and 9 or 10, but you know, as I said, it's for all ages. It's for a family. Mm-hmm. But the dog becomes ill, and then it goes into where the dog passes, and then goes into the activities that the family does together, kind of to help each other through the loss. And then after the story part, there's just a 2.5-page little guide for families on what I think are common sense things, suggesting activities and suggesting that you keep the lines of communication open with your kids, because just like adults, every child deals with grief in a different way. So just different family activities. I really believe that kind of keeping the lines of communication open, it's going to not speed up the grief process, but just kind of make it a little bit more smooth. Mm-hmm. But the reason I wrote it was because when our dog, the real Ruby, her name was Bijou, when she died, it wasn't that my kids were really grasping for something to read. I sort of think it was kind of coming from me that I felt like I needed to, you know how parents today kind of feel like they need to make sure that their kids are understanding things, you know what I mean? So I was kind of looking for resources on pet loss for my kids, and although there are a lot of great books out there, I have never wanted to slam any books. You know, there weren't any books that really spoke to me as one of the two parents of my personal children. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I thought, well, being a writer, I thought, you know what, let me just write this little story. And originally the story wasn't really ever intended to be published. It was just really something for me to share with my kids and of course my husband and my extended family. And as time went on, I thought, you know what, why not publish it?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And actually, one of the things that makes the book a little bit different from some of the other really good stories about pet loss is that this book uses actually family photographs. So the feedback that I've gotten from many people is that by using the photographs, it kind of makes the story very, very relatable on a different level from just seeing illustrations.
Yeah.
Because they follow, you know, they can see that the boy is growing up and, you know what I mean?
So. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think also it is an extremely difficult concept for children to grasp, and particularly when it's a pet, you know, and a dog that's been with them and one of the family, you know, and they're, because they're there day in, day out, they're just with you every single day, and they are a member of the family, and to lose them is an incredibly hard, you know, thing to do and to go through, and where have they gone and why have they gone? But also, I think that the good thing about a story is it gets those concepts across to them, but also it's then one removed, isn't it? And I think sometimes it's easier to discuss things, not specifically about your family, but from the story, you know, and you get sort of more from them then.
Yes, I think so too. And I think what the story will do for other families is it will open doors for further communication. It may be that a child is maybe scared to ask questions. One of the parts of the story, and I mentioned, the story is true with its age-appropriate details, but one of the parts of the story that that I thought was very, very important to include was that the boy in the story sees his mother crying, but she's trying to hide it, and then he gives her a hug and she feels better. So it's kind of like giving them permission to show emotion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's important with kids, because kids, obviously depending on the situation, sometimes they can go through life and things can happen and out of fear, they don't ask questions or they keep things inside. And you know, as we've all found out over the last many years, that and normally when you express emotion, it can help you get through certain things.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And obviously, talking about it, you know, as you say, helps you get through it. It doesn't speed things up, but it just, you know where everybody is and how they're coping within that, you know, your family.
Right. And of course, you know, most people going through grief would prefer for it to be over, but that's not really the point. I think that in order for someone to grieve completely, I think it's a different period of time for everybody, but I think it just has to go through a certain, well, you know, the stages of grief, but it just has to go through a certain pattern before it's over. And, you know, for obviously, you know, I still miss my dog and my kids and my husband still miss the dog, but we're able to, you know, handle life, you know, just fine. And, and the idea of remembering Ruby or Bijou, is that she's memories are, I think I heard once memories or photographs on the heart. And that's kind of what, you know, we always have her with us. It's just that she's not physically with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an important point because obviously, you know, there is a point where you have to think, well, I have to go on with my life. I can't, you know, mourn this dog to the point that it stops the rest of my life. But also, I think for some people, the first time you lose a dog, it's a roar. You know, for you, it's very raw and emotional and it's a disaster. But if you other people who aren't dog lovers or who haven't gone through that don't understand. And I think some people sort of, it's nice to, as you say, sort of point out to them or give them permission kind of thing. These feelings are valid. You've lost a family member. It's okay to mourn, you know.
And a lot of people see their dogs more than they see their relatives.
Yeah.
You know, if they live with them, they're with them every day. And like you said, their family, they're a big part of their life. So when that, you know, part of your life is suddenly kind of ripped out, you know, it can be very difficult. And I think it's magnified in kids, especially when you think of small children. They spend a lot of time playing with the animals in the house normally, you know, normally, unless there's some, you know, strange reason why they don't. But with a dog or even a cat, children normally love to just play around, throw balls and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, really losing a best friend.
Yeah. 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 Cause we've sort of said this before on the program, but they do, kids and dogs. Okay. There can be problems, but when you get it right, there is such an incredible bond between them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. You've obviously, these experiences led you to write Remembering Ruby, but they've also led you to write a blog, haven't they?
Yes. Yes. I have a blog. Can I give the address?
Yes, of course.
Okay. It's http://, and it's Remember Ruby, all one word. Hmm. So it's not Remembering Ruby. It's rememberruby.blogspot.com. And, when I started it, we were in the middle of the publication process, and my sister, actually, who is a graphic designer, and she's the one who made all of my photographs look beautiful for the book, and she designed the cover. She is an active blogger, and she suggested that it would be a great idea to kind of start this website and talk a little bit about the publishing process, obviously for marketing, but also just to kind of, you know, have yet another keepsake of this whole experience. And I've not only been posting updates for the publication process, but I've got a couple of reviews that have been on there. And then also I wrote essays. One of the things that helped me get through my own grief process after the dog passed away was I felt sort of panicky within my own body that I was going to forget things that I wanted to remember about her for a really long time. So being a writer, again, I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. I wrote about 120 pages full of essays where I basically just wrote everything that I could remember, every detail in story form. And again, not intended for publication, but I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll post it on the blog and people who are interested can kind of read the stories. So I've been posting them in pieces. I would never, you know, post 120 pages in one day. That might be a little bit much, but I'm posting stories and I think it's kind of neat that, you know, people who are interested in the book can come and read the stories about the dog that the book was wrote about.
Yes. Yeah.
Written about. That was really bad English. That the book was written about. Yes, I am a writer.
Never mind. Now, we've talked about sort of, you know, moving on. So, do you have a dog now?
We do have a dog now. Her name is Roxy, and she is also a beagle. We laugh. Well, my husband doesn't laugh about this very much, but we laugh because she is the absolute and total opposite of Bijou. Bijou was, first of all, she was a large beagle. She was in around 45 pounds, which is, I have papers on her. Everyone swears she was not a beagle, but I said, well, I don't know. Should we question the papers? It said she was a beagle. But she was 45 pounds and she was very calm and she was, you know, just very mellow. She was very well behaved, except for the normal beagle things like getting into food. And, you know, I think I block a lot of that out. But as a puppy, she did destroy things. Mm-hmm. This dog, Roxy, is about 25 pounds and she is a bundle of energy. She had, within her first year, she bit through a power cord and electrocuted herself.
Oh my
She goodness. Got sprayed by a skunk. She got out of the house and ran down the nearby golf course twice and had to be caught by people out there. She is, we'll call her vivacious.
Behind, yes.
But we adore her. We absolutely adore her. My husband, although won't admit it publicly, does adore her as well. But I sort of believe in fate in certain things when it's convenient for me. And I always say that Bijou didn't want me to have another dog as good as well behaved as she was. So she sent this one to me. But that was, it's funny how things change in your mind, because when Bijou was ill, she had cancer. And I was always swearing I would never, ever get another dog. You've probably heard that many times from people. Yeah. And then when she died, I still didn't want another dog, but then as time went by, a month went by, 2 months went by, I started to feel like I really need another dog. I told my husband that we would wait a year, or that I would wait a year. He could have waited forever, but we waited a year, and then we brought Roxy in the house. And she keeps us busy, that's for sure. But she'll be four in March.
Oh, so she's in.
And the kids, you know, the kids sometimes they're. Obviously, they would be crushed if something ever happened to her, but she's not a cuddly dog like Bijou was, so they don't have the, you know, lay around and pet her all the time kind of relationship that they did with the other dog. That might come later, but right now she's too busy running around and making trouble.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is. She wants a book of her own.
I think so. That's what my sister has told me. And we've joked around about it, and my sister has suggested some funny titles that I probably shouldn't say. They deal with being in trouble. But but yeah, she probably does want another book of her own. And actually, my personal blog, I couldn't share stories about Roxy on the blog for Remembering Ruby. So I put things about her on my personal blog sometimes. In fact, I just posted some video of her this morning. So
yeah. Do you want to give us the address for that?
Oh, sure. Okay. It's http://, the suburban scrawl, scrawl.blogspot.com. So that's my personal one. That's kind of where I keep all my other, you know, you can find my work here, and these are the other blogs that I read, and all that kind of non-professional stuff. I keep on the private blog, or the, you know, the personal blog. Because I wanted to, I started to feel like with the first blog, oh, well, I sort of feel like part of me is being kind of squelched because I can't post certain things on here. So it's sort of tough keeping up two blogs, but it's fun. It's a good hobby.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's good, because then you can indulge, as you say, you can indulge the dog side and then the Ruby side, and also the, you know, the other things as well, can't you?
The Roxy and family side, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh. Well, thank you ever so much. I'm sure you've helped many families cope with the loss of their beloved dog.
Well, I hope so. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
If you'd like to find out more about Melissa's book, Remembering Ruby, we have links to both her blogs on the Dogcast Radio site, along with a beautiful photo of Melissa with Bijou, the beagle who inspired the book. You can't keep a good man down, or an over-affectionate dog. When your dog dies, it can help to make a lasting memorial to him and to talk to others about him. Here's Richard Seal talking about his website where members can do just that.
OK, well, our primary service would be an online pet memorial service, so find there's over 250 memorials to pets at the moment. Each pet owner can have a pet gallery where they can have photographs and movies of the pet. We have a poems, stories and prayer section. We have an e-card facility so you can send e-sympathy cards to somebody who's lost a pet. We have message boards for our members so they can discuss between each other and support each other in the loss of a pet. That's basically what the site's about.
Yeah. Now, there's obviously, when you lose your dog, you know, or any pet, but we'll talk about dogs, you need to talk to people about this, and this is another outlet for, you know, not just for the people that you can actually talk to face to face, but you can outlet this on the internet now, can't you?
Precisely, yes. Well, a lot of our memorials, you can see how much users care about pets because we have a facility where they can put the memories of the pets underneath each memorial, and some of them quite long and touching.
Yeah.
So we've also recently added the message board facility, which is just getting going, just started that in the last few months, so all that. It's just for members only, so they can talk to each other and express their feelings.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I had a look at one of the memorials, and I had to say that they really are moving. Could you give us an example of one, do you think?
I think one of the most touching ones is a dog called Sissy Muniz. I don't know if you've come across that one.
No.
It's a dog that died, I think this was last year. Hmm. It's one they found when it was young. It had been thrown out of the car, abused, and they're taking it in. And if you read the tribute to this dog, you can see how attached they've been and how devastated they are by the loss of this pet. These people are one of our most regular clients. They seem to be logging on every day and they seem to be making a lot of use out of the service.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems to be really helping them.
Yeah. I think, because from what I could see, the memorials, people can leave comments on the memorials, can't they, as well?
Yes, different people, you can leave comments on anybody's memorials. Of course, they go to us first to be vetted, just to make sure nothing offensive is being posted. And once approved, that tribute will go on to the bottom of the memorial.
Yeah.
So it's some quite touching ones from other people. It's another way that people can help to support each other in the loss of a pet. And it's been a very popular feature of the site, that.
Yes, yeah. And what was it that inspired you to start the site?
Well, it wasn't myself that came up with the inspiration. It was my friend's father about 7 years ago. My daughter lost a pet budgie. And living in an apartment, they obviously had nowhere to bury it, no permanent memorial. So he thought it'd be a great idea to have an online pet memorial service to help his daughter. But he didn't know anything about making websites. And years later, when I got back in touch with his friend, he put the idea to me. And the three of us got together and we created the site.
Yeah, yeah. And it's doing well?
And it's doing very well at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, it's helping people at a time, you know, when they really need help. If there's somebody out there that wants to, you know, they've lost their dog and they would like to make use of this, can you tell us the website address?
The website address is www.apetsamateur.com. Yeah, well, one of the best things about our site is it just costs $5, which is around £2.50 in the UK at the current exchange rate, and that gives you an account for life. And the initial account includes two memorials, but they will be on the site for life. What we noticed, there are other websites that do offer a similar service, but not only the more expensive, the likes of a renewal fee or so. Every year you have to pay like another $10-$20 to renew, or your pet disappears. And we thought, that's not really nice, and you lost a pet having to keep doing that, and if you forget, your pet's not there, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
That would do it for life.
We have a link on the Dogcast Radio site to apetcemetery.com. dog may have his day, but it's the puppies that have the weekends. Jill's standard poodles went missing from her garden, and on the same night there was an attack on sheep nearby. Although the poodles came home perfectly clean and no evidence was found against them, they were taken into custody, and Jill wasn't even allowed to know where they were. The last time we spoke to Jill, the dogs were under a possible death sentence, and things were looking very bad indeed. She, her family, and her dogs have been through a lot since, and I asked her what the situation is now.
Right, situation to date is we've got the doggies back.
Good.
The babies came home, it was about just under 4 months when we got them back. And I have to say that it was down to the dog handler who has turned out to be a real star, the police dog handler, because he actually came into court. He's the dangerous dogs officer for Sussex. And he actually came into the court and said these dogs are not dangerous, they should not be here, basically.
Yeah.
So it was down to him that we got them back, which was great. But we did have the bail conditions imposed in the fact that they had to be on a lead any time they were outside the garden. And if they were in the garden, they had to have somebody over the age of 18 in there with them.
Good grief.
Which, well, it just seemed a bit ridiculous when we've got this 7-foot electrified fence now. And, you know, it just seemed a bit...
Yeah,
excessive, shall we say.
Yeah.
But, not be nasty, we did it.
Yeah. Is that so, relaxed now, Jill? Is that finished with
now? Yeah, that's all gone now.
Brilliant.
That's all gone now.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it all got to the point where they were actually going to criminally prosecute, and we had a court date. And literally, it was 4 days before the trial that we were actually going, got a letter through from the, they called themselves CPS, saying that they were dropping all charges.
Yeah.
Vacating the trial, yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, we sort of wonder why they, 4 days prior to it, did they suddenly decide they're not going to do it after, pushing this and pushing this and pushing this far, and then they suddenly drop it all, and you think, well, yeah, okay. We did wonder whether it was in relation to the fact that we tried to get hold of the actual dog handler himself to come and be a witness in court.
Yeah.
And the CPS couldn't get hold of him, allegedly, for our solicitor to contact him.
Hmm.
In the end, I wrote him a letter. I went and posted it around, literally delivered by hand to the local police stations. I then found out that he was based down in Hove, near Brighton. So I sent him a recorded delivery, which allegedly he should have to sign for. But having said that, that was on the 22nd of February, and then it was 10 days ago. Was it about 2 weeks ago? We actually got a call from him. Peter got a call from him.
Yeah.
And he said, listen, he's very sorry, but he'd only just been given the letter.
Oh, my goodness.
Which makes you think, well, why?
Yeah.
Had he not been given the letter previously?
Yeah. So someone signed for it, and then goodness knows where it's been in the meantime.
Well, you do wonder. And we'd also asked for the Chief Inspector Potter of Sussex to be called to the witness stand as well for witness coercion.
Yeah.
And witness coaching. And strangely enough, the CPS couldn't get hold of him either.
Mm.
Because we got a very interesting copy of a fax from him to one of the investigating officers that basically said that they had to get all the witnesses singing from the same song sheet.
Good grief. Yeah.
Just makes you wonder.
Yeah, because there was... I mean, you tell me whether you want to mention this, but there was an occasion where... One of the in the ID parade, wasn't it, where you'd had the dogs groomed, trimmed,
yep,
and yet the witness was saying, "I know the fur is longer now than when I saw them."
Yes,
but it's the same dogs, and you think, "Well, hang on, where are you getting this from?"
Well, I actually went through absolutely everything, and we worked out they'd actually had 3 doggy ID parades without telling us.
Oh.
2 were held on one day in June. One in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Yeah.
This was when the dogs were obviously fairly hairy and not looking particularly wonderful.
Yeah.
And yes, they identified the dogs, apparently. And then the other one was it was in August, so that was after they'd been clipped. After they'd been bathed, it was literally just after they'd been bathed and clipped, so they were looking pretty spick and span.
Yeah.
But it was the same dogs, apparently. And with poodles, when they've been clipped or when they're hairy, they look very different.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, they do look very different.
Yeah.
So it just does amaze you,
yeah.
You know, how they can say that. And the one witness who did the ID parade in August, in his statement, said that he saw a smooth-coated black dog with a large brass collar, which isn't our dogs.
No.
You know.
No.
They've got pink collars.
Yeah.
Very twee, I know, but, you know, they've got pink collars.
Yeah.
I mean, you do just wonder.
Yeah.
Well, the lady whose bungalow... it was behind her bungalow that the attack actually took place.
Yeah.
So that she refused to do the ID parade because she knew it wasn't our dogs. And she said she wouldn't be able to recognise the dogs again.
Mm.
Having said that, she had she was wandering through the village and she came up to me and she said, "Listen, I've seen those dogs. I know whose dogs it is that did it."
Mm.
So she phoned up the police and the police refused to take her statement.
Oh, good grief.
I know.
Why? Yeah, it does seem this case has been one mistake after another, doesn't it?
It just seems to be a big, a big muck-up, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah.
A total and utter muck-up.
Yeah.
A, they shouldn't have been taken away in the first place.
No.
Which is what really gets me. Because taking them away, I mean, has Minky, the brown one's sort of back to her usual self, but Jenny still isn't right.
Oh.
She's still not the same. She's still a bit of an old grump bag, and she still takes herself off and stays in our bedroom and everything. And she's still not right.
Yeah.
And all we can just do is give her love and cuddles, and you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all we can do. I mean, we go back to the vets, and I literally have to drag them into the vets, and because they just don't like going.
No.
They don't like going away from us.
No.
I
was going to say this has had an effect on your whole family, hasn't it?
Oh, crikey, yes. Oh, yes. Not just our family, but all our friends and everything as well. I mean, I think they were probably a bit fed up of hearing about it. But,
yeah.
And, I mean, the solicitor did say that we do have to watch our backs.
Mm.
Because there's obviously somebody that has taken great offence.
Yeah.
The police can... they still have 3 years to bring another criminal charge.
Yes.
And, you know, the farmer still has 6 years to bring a civil case.
Ugh.
So, you know, somebody today commented and said, well, it wouldn't be better just to have gone to court and get it all over and done with and finished.
Yeah.
But, you know, that wasn't the way things were going. So, you know, we have to live with that. And the funny thing is, Julia, I mean, since the court case was dropped... and the solicitor said, "Watch your backs." I mean, I've you go out with them when they go for a last night wee-wee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just wandering around the garden. And we do live in the middle of nowhere, and it is pitch black. And our nearest property is about 800, 900 yards away.
Yeah.
And there was somebody in the bushes talking. Two people sitting in the bushes talking next to our house.
Mm.
And then a couple of weeks later, there was somebody with a torch peering into the garden.
Oh.
And you just think, what is this?
Yeah.
It's like living in a Nazi state, so to speak. Somebody's there looking the whole time, and you just think, this is ridiculous. Haven't got other things to do in your life.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
so yeah, we just...
this, your experience, should strike fear into the heart of every dog owner in the UK. Because basically, on no evidence... your dogs were taken away from you for 4 months, weren't they?
Yeah, well, this is one reason why I really, you know, I keep reiterating this. I just want to get the message out there. Just if anybody turns up on your doorstep, then just shut the door and call the solicitor and say no.
Yeah.
Which is what we should have done in the first place. But the trouble is, we're, you know, sort of trusting people. And you believe the police. Well, you did believe the police, and I said I don't anymore.
Yeah.
But you do sort of think, oh, cripes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it had happened, and if there was DNA, forensics, blood, anything else, then you put your hands up. We live in the country, you know, it's realistic.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, you know, sorry, what can we do?
Yes,
but
yeah.
When there's no evidence, there's no proof, there's nothing against them, they come and take them away under a completely wrong act, you know, just please, everybody out there, beware.
Yeah.
You know, please, please, watch your backs, be careful, and just say no and get on the phone to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Don't ever listen or necessarily believe everything everybody tells you.
Yeah.
You
because,
know.
As you found, once the dogs have been taken, you weren't even allowed to know where they were you?
No, well, we weren't allowed to see them. We weren't allowed to see them. We weren't allowed to have any contact with them.
Yeah.
Nothing. And not being nasty, nobody would even talk to us.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what we found so frustrating, is the fact that even standing on the police, you know, in the police station saying, I want to talk to somebody about this, oh, there's nobody here. I'll leave a message and they can go back to you. And they never did.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think you might remember initially why I contacted our MP, because I just wanted somebody to talk to us, to tell
yes.
us where our dogs were. Were they all right? Because they did need clipping, they needed injections, they needed, you know, looking after.
Yeah, yeah.
But just trying to get somebody to talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, the other obvious thing is with a pet dog, well, with any dog, but with a pet dog, they need
yeah.
their family, they need their pack.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And being isolated, they weren't even kept together, we gathered. They were kept separate.
Oh.
So they weren't even together.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. And you know, I have to say, when they came back, you know, they did just sort of slip back in. They did integrate again. But, you know, it's still... Jenny's still a bit of a grump bag.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She is, I think, still feeling that she has to prove that she is the boss.
Yeah.
Because, of course, having been taken away and then coming back and everything, it's just, you know, she's had her position sort of, she was unsure of her position.
Yes, yeah.
Which is why she's still trying to do it, but it's, you know, you keep thinking about it, you know, all the time, because when I'm flying, I fly with lots of different people, and they say, oh, how are things going, what's happening, and so you're going through it all again.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
You think, please don't ever let this happen to anybody else.
Yes,
it isn't a joke.
No.
It isn't nice. It did put a total dampener on the whole time.
Yeah.
Because the whole time, that's all you're thinking about. Everything is evolving around, right, what's the next stage? What have I got to do next? What have I, you know, got to get prepared next? Then you're reading through more bits and getting more info and trying to prepare more to put forward, you know, the dog's innocence. So it has been a hell of a nightmare, and don't let it happen to anybody else.
Yes, yeah. Well, we can try and sort of help you get that message
yeah.
out and help yeah. educate people that, as you say, if you're accused, hold your dogs and phone a solicitor.
Yeah, and just say no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what else can I say, apart from the fact that, you know... It is a travesty. It should never have happened. And without your help and without Beverly's help and without support from a lot of other people, I don't think we'd have made it through, Julie.
Yeah.
I really yeah. do think that, because it is so harrowing.
Yeah.
It isn't a joke. It is, you know, the dogs are our lives. I mean, very much I think like your dogs. They're part of our family.
Yeah, yeah.
They are our lives, you know. They're not a hobby, they're our lives.
Thankfully, the dogs who are her life are back home now, and the whole family is slowly getting back to normal. It's a very sad matter that any of it happened at all, and it is a stark warning for all British dog owners. We wish Jill and her family, human and canine, the very best of luck with putting the whole horrible experience behind them. A dog's bark may be worse than his bite, but it's never quite so personal. Coping with the death of your dog can be extremely difficult. The grief you feel can be complicated by guilt at having to make the decision to euthanize the dog. The comparatively short length of the dog's life leaves you with the impression that they didn't have a fair amount of life. I think many of us view our dogs as childlike, not a replacement or extra children, but definitely as a dependent in need of protection, and we feel we fail to protect them from illness and death. All this is made worse by the fact that non-dog owners may dismiss our loss as just a dog. The important thing is, in this situation, you're not alone. Many people find their dog's passing incredibly hard to cope with. The author and dog expert Patricia O'Connell talks about her dog's death as making her feel that all the oxygen had been sucked out of the room. Actress Tatum O'Neill recently blamed her dog's death for sending her back to old addictions because she just couldn't get over her loss. We form apparently unbreakable bonds with our dogs, and when those bonds are broken by circumstance, it hurts, and the wounds take time to heal. At this point, I'd like you to spare a thought for Tamara Lloyd, who runs the Alternative Animal Sanctuary in the UK. Tamara gives animals a home when everyone else turns them away. She's a real last chance and a happy ending for many animals, including several dogs. Her devotion to her animals and the sacrifices she makes to continue her work are amazing and humbling. In February this year, a fire broke out at the sanctuary, and her home burnt to the ground. She lost not only her home, but many of the animals she had taken in. We met five of her lovely dogs, all of whom died in the fire. She's obviously very much in need of help to rebuild the sanctuary, which has charitable status. If you could help, please visit www.alternativesanctuary.co.uk and help support an extremely courageous woman and the animals she rescues. We've dealt with some serious topics this time, so here's a story to lighten the mood. An old man and his dog were walking along a country road, enjoying the scenery, when it suddenly occurred to the man that he was actually dead. He remembered dying, and that his dog too had been dead for many years. He wondered where the road would lead them, and continued onward. After a while, they came to a high white stone wall along one side of the road. It looked like fine marble. At the top of a long hill, a tall white arch that gleamed in the sunlight broke it. When he was standing before it, he saw a magnificent gate in the arch that looked like mother of pearl, and the street that led to the gate looked like pure gold. He was pleased that he had finally arrived at heaven, and the man and his dog walked towards the gate. As he got closer, he saw someone sitting at a beautifully carved desk off to one side. When he was close enough, he called out, "Excuse me, but is this heaven?" "Yes, it is, sir," the man answered. "Wow, would you happen to have some water?" the man asked. "Of course, sir, come right in, and I'll have some ice water brought right up." The gatekeeper gestured to his rear, and the huge gate began to open. "I assume my friend can come in?" the man asked, gesturing towards his dog. But the reply was, "I'm sorry, sir, but we don't accept pets." The man thought about it, then thanked the gatekeeper, turned back toward the road, and continued in the direction he had been going. After another long walk, he reached the top of another long hill, and he came to a dirt road that led through a farm gate. There was no fence, and it looked as if the gate had never been closed, as grass had grown up around it. As he approached the gate, he saw a man just inside, sitting in the shade of a tree in a rickety old chair, reading a book. "Excuse me," he called to the reader, "do you have any water?" "Certainly. There's a pump over there," the man said, pointing to a place that couldn't be seen from outside the gate. "Come on in and make yourself at home." "How about my friend here?" the traveller gestured to the dog. "He's welcome too, and there's a bowl by the pump," he said. They walked through the gate, and sure enough, there was an old-fashioned hand pump with a dipper hanging on it, and a bowl next to it on the ground. The man filled the bowl for his dog. He then took a long drink himself. When both were satisfied, he and the dog walked back toward the man, who was sitting under the tree waiting for them, and asked, "What do you call this place?" "This is heaven," was the answer. "Well, that's confusing," the traveller said. "It certainly doesn't look like heaven. And there's another man down the road who said that place was heaven." "Oh, you mean the place with the gold street and the pearly gates," said the man under the tree. "Yes, it was beautiful," said the traveller. "Nope. That's hell." The traveller was puzzled. "Doesn't it offend you for them to use the name of heaven like that?" "No," said the man sitting under the tree. "I can see how you might think so, but it actually saves us a lot of time. They screen out the people who are willing to leave their best friends behind. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Did you hear that they crossed a collie with a Malamute? They got a Commute, a dog that travels to work.